Hello and welcome to The Opening Bell, the Boxing News Podcast. My name's Matt Christie and today I'm joined by John Dennan.
Hello.
Who, like a true soldier, has pulled himself off his deathbed and come in to do the podcast. Now, you have been struggling. You left us on press day because you were that bad.
And
you
must
have been, ill to leave on press day. How are you feeling today?
You know, I'm coping. I'm, you know, delirious. Who knows what I'm going to say. But, you know, it's my duty to be here, so I'm here.
You sound worse than you look.
So is that a compliment?
I think so.
You sound better than you look.
I always do. Okay, so we've got a few bits and bobs that have been going on in the boxing world that we're going to talk about. First of all, if we talk about some of the stuff that was on Box Nation over the weekend, we've got Marco Hook, who again proved to be a better fighter second time round, as he beat Firat Arslan, stopping in six rounds, and their first fight in 2012 was a lot closer. And it's the mark of a good fighter when they can do that. And he's also did it against Ola Afolabi recently, Marco Hook. And if you look at his record at cruiserweight and what he's been doing as WBO champion, I know it sounds crazy, but bear in mind the cruiserweight division is in its comparative infancy to the other divisions, but Marco Hook is one of the all-time great fighters in that division.
It's hard to argue with you, Matt, especially in my weakened condition. He doesn't look like an all-time great fighter.
No.
He's a bit rough and ready. I mean, he's entertaining to watch. He does bring the heat, but, you know, David Haye is a cruiserweight. Would he beat Marco Hook?
I think he would, but his body of work, David Haye's body of work, well, he wasn't there as long, was he? He wasn't there as long. I guess you could say that Haye more or less cleaned up. But no, I'd certainly pick David Haye over Marco Hook. But what's next for Marco Hook? Because he's only 29. There was talk after some of his kind of mediocre performances that some of the hard battles may have taken out of him. But he looked decent against Arslan.
And he really brought in sort of brought a real intensity to the way he was fighting. So it looks like there's a lot of life left in him.
He's still talking about moving up to heavyweight. His one performance there against Alexander Povetkin was fairly impressive, a lot better than most people expected. Will Hook be a worthwhile addition to the heavyweight ranks, or would you rather see him at cruiserweight?
So I think, to compete with the heavyweights, you need the dimensions, don't you? And I just don't think he's really big enough. But then, I suppose, with the absence of Vitaly, there might be, you know, weaker contenders for the WBC title, for instance, and so he could make entertaining fights. I think he's better off just dominating his division, I think it'd be better to see him, you know, try to unify titles than trying to become a two-weight champion.
Would you do you put him at number one at cruiserweight, or maybe Juan Pablo Hernandez, or is there anybody else at cruiserweight that can really argue with his credentials as number one?
I think he's probably number one at the moment, but that doesn't mean someone like Hernandez couldn't beat him. But I think when you look at his body of work, that would put, you know, for what he's achieved so far, that would put him at number one.
Okay, let's move on. Speaking of body of work, let's move to Lamont Peterson, who, to be fair, looked pretty good against Thierry Jean at the weekend to retain his IBF light welterweight title. This, of course, is the IBF light welterweight title that he won in controversial circumstances. First of all, with the close decision against Amir Khan, and then, of course, with the subsequent events that occurred with him. We found out that he'd failed drug tests and what have you. He also has since lost to Lucas Matisse in a non-title fight, which historically is not a bad thing. Champions over time have, of course, taken part in non-title fights and lost, and their title has not been affected. However, there's something about Lamont Peterson that bothers me with him being a world champion and with the whole drug testing thing, whether or not he's got a valid excuse for the testosterone that was in his body. Surely the line should be drawn with the fact he failed that drug test. Is there any other sport where someone competing at the top level would fail a drug test and then be allowed to defend their world title?
I'm trying to think, but, yeah, like you say, he should really have been stripped of that title. And, you know, having a non-title fight, like sneaking up to a catch weight just to not risk his title against Matisse. He was a bit cheeky as well. But yeah, it's sort of, it reflects badly on boxing that he's still a champion. And it is, like, Lamont Peterson is troubling because he was an extreme, you know, before we found out about the failed drugs test, he was, you know, an extremely appealing fighter after everything he'd been through with his, in his life. He was a great boxing story. And he said himself that he stood for something after when he won the title in Washington against Khan. And that's why it's sort of doubly depressing for that was based on what, you know, what appears to be cheating. So there's not a, you know, there's not a lot you can say really to justify, or at least, you know, if he could have been stripped of the title, maybe served out some sort of ban, then you could feel like he's been punished.
Yeah.
And that would be all right. Whereas it seems that he's sort of carried on unaffected.
Yeah, it does. Yeah, as I said, it just doesn't seem right. And, but you're exactly right with Lamont Peterson. He did seem like one of the game's, you know, good guys, someone to root for until all this came out. And, you know, for whatever his reasons, you do sense that he's kind of got away with this without being punished at all. I know the WBA kind of stripped him of the title. The IBF chose not to, for whatever reason.
But that makes it look even worse for him and the IBF that he's still got one of his titles.
And boxing. And it really is kind of, you know, it shows how muddled the sport can be at the very, very top level as well. They're talking about him fighting Danny Garcia, who you would say is the division leader. Give him a shot of upsetting Garcia.
Yeah, for all we were just saying about the reasons we don't like Lamont Peterson, he's very, very good, isn't he? And he's got a lot of heart in the ring as well. I think Garcia's got to be the favourite going into that. Garcia's looked so good and beat Matisse in such style. But Peterson is a really good fighter. He sort of really knows what he's doing in the ring. He doesn't seem like he's got outstanding punch power or outstanding speed, but his timing and being good at everything makes him quite formidable. And the fact, you know, we've seen him be knocked over, but he always seems to get back up.
Yeah.
It's probably going to be a good fight, sadly.
Yeah, well, I won't be watching it, that's for sure. Anyway,
I've got stuff on. So.
All right. Okay. So let's move on. There's quite a lot of rematches being rumored, discussed, and confirmed for the next few months. But the biggest news of a confirmation of a rematch was Timothy Bradley Manny Pacquiao, which takes place on April the 12th in Las Vegas. I'm fascinated by this one. The first one, okay, it wasn't a classic. It won't go down in history as a great fight, but it will go down in history as one of the most infamous stories in boxing history with what happened with that decision. What's going to happen in the rematch? Does Pacquiao repeat his perceived dominance and win the decision this time? Does he go hell for leather and knock Bradley out, or is Bradley that much of a better fighter? Pacquiao has slipped a bit and Bradley wins deservedly this time. Or none of the above.
Sorry. I don't know. But Bradley, he's like, because Pacquiao seems to have lost a bit of the fire, slipped a little bit, even though he won well against Rios. He's not quite the same force of old. Bradley just, he's got this indomitable will to win, and he'll be so up for this as well, because he was, you know, it wasn't his, you know, he didn't judge the fight. And he really resented the sort of, all the criticism that was heaped on him after the Pacquiao fight, after the first one. So he'll be ultra determined, even though as he always is for this. And he's very convincing as well. I think, you know, I think it's actually a real 50-50 fight. Bradley, there was a great win over Marquez, showed how technically excellent he was from the Provodnikov fight. We know that he's at heart a fighter and he's got a lot of bottle. But then, you know, their first fight would say that Pacquiao's a little bit better. So maybe Pacquiao can get the points win he should have got the first time. But it's very easy to see Bradley just not allowing himself to lose.
It's true. It's it's a really, really tough one to call, isn't it? Do you think with Pacquiao now, considering how frustrated he was with the decision the first time around, not wanting to leave it into the judge's hands, what are the chances of, and particularly bear in mind as well the problems that Bradley had with Provodnikov. He's been dropped a few times. He was dropped against Kendall Holt, who was in trouble early in that fight. What are the chances of Pacquiao walking out, like the Pacquiao of old, and steamrolling through Timothy Bradley in 3 or 4 rounds?
I think that scenario is pretty unlikely, because it's, Pacquiao he hasn't seemed to have that ruthless, destructive instincts that he did a few years ago. Bradley's a tough guy. I don't think he's going to let himself, he's not going to lie down easily, and defensively he's quite good too. He's not going to sort of walk onto anything recklessly. So I don't think he's going to get taken out early, but I've been wrong many times.
Haven't we all? Something else interesting with this fight as well for me is that Bradley has kind of edged himself into the top 3 or 4 pound for pound over the last 2 years, really. Pacquiao has slipped out of that. But the winner of this fight, you could make a case for then jumping all the way up to number 2, couldn't you, to be behind Mayweather. Do you think that's fair, or do you think Andre Ward keeps that mythical runners-up slot?
I think Andre Ward probably does stay up there. He's just looked no one's untouchable, but I think the way you're looking at it is there anyone out there who can beat him? Andre Ward is looking pretty close to unbeatable, whereas Bradley's been, he's been hurt or been lucky with a decision, even though he sort of finds a way to win. I think in our fevered imaginations and pound for pound lists, that might count against him. Because he still has the sort of, even though he's right up there, he still has the sort of aura of an underdog.
Yeah.
A scrappy underdog, yeah, but definitely. An underdog nevertheless.
Definitely. And I mean, something else, and I know this, this has been discussed too many times. I'm probably the most guilty of it in the Boxing News office. But also, the winner of Bradley Pacquiao is surely puts himself forward to be the most deserving of a fight against Floyd Mayweather, right?
Yeah, but Bradley's locked in with Top Rank now, so that's just...
It's a shame, it's just, isn't it?
Yeah, it's silly, isn't it? You talk about other sports.
Yeah.
The two outstanding boxers in any weight division should fight each other for the title, but we've sort of got used to the reality of Top Rank fighters aren't boxing Floyd Mayweather anytime soon. Sorry, mate.
Don't like it. But no, you are absolutely right, I fear. Moving on, the other, I think we spoke about this last week, was the whole situation with Carl Froch, George Groves, and the third man now, Julio Cesar Chavez Jr. This week is something else, Julio Cesar Chavez Jr. has been made by the WBC, and we'll talk about WBC actually, has been made mandatory by the WBC at super middleweight. He hasn't had a single fight at super middleweight. What's all that about?
It doesn't make any sense. And this is another of boxing's many problems. Like, ranking systems should surely be transparent. It should be clear. In an ideal world, it would be like a ladder where if you beat the guy above you, you go up to his place. And also, it would make the sort of non-title fights a lot more interesting if there was a clear path to get to a champion. I don't know. I don't get it. It doesn't make any sense.
No, it does. I mean, particularly his last fight was against Brian Vera. That was unconvincing. And unconvincing is probably not big enough a word for his performance there.
And there's so many unprofessional things Chavez Jr. has done. It's just not fair, coming in at the way.
Okay, we'll move back. In fact, now while we're on the subject of the WBC, we'll go back to Froch and Groves shortly. But also, while I noticed that Chavez Jr. had been installed as their super middleweight mandatory with never having fought at the weight, I also noticed that Anthony Joshua was 3 places above David Price in the heavyweight rankings. Is that fair?
I don't understand that. either. It's no criticism to Anthony Joshua. I think he's very, very good, but he has only had three fights. And David Price is, as well as his recent couple of losses to Tony Thompson, he's had some good wins on the way as well. So yeah, no, Price should be higher than that.
He should be. And also, further investigation also showed that Sam Sexton, who Price knocked out in four rounds pretty handily, pretty convincingly, in 2012, I believe, is at number 27, 10 places above Price, and incidentally 7 above Joshua. Again, it's the whole ranking system, and I'm not...
So Joshua Sam Sexton has to happen. Is that what you're telling me?
Well, that's what it's the fight the public wants.
It's true.
To make it a WBC eliminator.
Perfect.
No, but I mean, I'm not singling out the WBC. We've already mentioned the IBF with their treatment of Lamont Peterson. None of the governing bodies really do themselves any favours, do they? And I know from when I speak to sports fans and what have you, it's the politics of the governing bodies that have the most trouble explaining and exactly how it all works. And
We're thinking for next week's issue, one of the questions pondering is, will boxing become a mainstream sport again? And I think it's exactly things like this that people don't understand, why certain fights aren't happening, or how this person is ranked so highly, what's he done to be there, that kind of thing. I think those are the kind of problems that make boxing, opaque to a general casual sports fan. So you're just going to turn off followers, or you're going to make it hard to follow the sport when, even the governing bodies don't seem to know what's going on.
Well, exactly. And it's difficult. It's difficult for us to provide the answers. It's been difficult for me in the past to provide the answers to the questions that people have posed to me, because it's just completely nonsensical, isn't it?
Yes.
Okay. Right. Okay. So back to, Froch Groves, Chavez. I think we'd both, and I don't think I'm being overly presumptuous, but I think I'm correct in saying we'd both like to see Froch Groves as opposed to Froch Chavez. But can you see Froch's logic in going down the Chavez route?
To an extent, because I do think the Groves fight should be appealing, because it would be so big. Especially in the UK, I'm not quite sure how the numbers would stack up, whereas Chavez is obviously more appealing in the US. But Froch's stance is quite an interesting one, because he's a proud man who doesn't want to be, bounced into anything or pushed one way or another. So I don't think he likes being dictated to by George Groves. I don't think he likes being told you have to do this. So you can see why someone would want to sort of have their fate in their own hands and make their own calls. But I still think George Groves would be the logical choice of opponent. And I wonder if talking about Chavez Jr. and his other options is just, is that a negotiating tactic to make sure he's going, to make sure he's got as many cards as possible going into that discussion. I don't know.
No, it's... It's an interesting one, and hopefully we'll have some answers. But for me, I've got, Froch Chavez, although it might be, a fairly decent spectacle, it would be, I don't think it'd be a major event compared to, when you compare it to some of the other fights that will be held in Las Vegas this year.
Maybe Froch feels more appreciated on the road, because he's had all those great triumphs.
Maybe.
On the way to the Super Six final and that kind of stuff overseas, maybe he didn't care for being booed at the end of the wasn't his fault, he didn't stop the fight, but I don't think he liked hearing boos in the Manchester Arena. So maybe he thinks he'll get more appreciation if he goes back on the road.
No, I agree. I agree with that. I just fear that I don't know what Froch, because he's saying that he wants challenges and that sort of thing. I can't imagine, if he goes out and he beats Julio Cesar Chavez, I can't imagine that really enhances his legacy a great deal. As we touched on earlier, Chavez has never fought at the weight. He had, even though he was unbeaten, a fairly mixed middleweight career, impressed in that last round against Sergio Martinez. But But for Froch to be up for a challenge, and I saw him on ringside and he was saying, yeah, you know, I'm not really excited about a Groves rematch. I like you, I wonder if he's actually telling the truth there, because I would have thought that after everything that went on in that first fight, the subsequent criticism he's received, Froch, the warrior, would want to just put all that to one side, and the only way he can do that is by going out and knocking George Groves in a rematch.
Yeah, I would have thought a rematch would mean a lot more to him. Where yeah. So like before the first fight, until they actually got in the ring, you know, I'm sure he didn't take him lightly, but it's not the same as that having that. You know, he wanted to settle the score with Kessler. There was a lot on the line against Bute. I don't think it had the same, you know, meaning. Now I think it would mean a lot to him because I think he finds Groves very annoying. Yeah. And I think he wants to get a clear result there. And also, I don't think, like, if now the IBF is saying he loses his title with them, I don't think he wants to relinquish his belt either.
It seems
like I imagine that would be important to him too.
Yeah, you'd think so. You know, you understand the lure of Las Vegas, but the lure,
you do, Matt.
The lure of Julio Cesar Chavez, not quite so much.
It's not a bad fight, though. No, I think you'd like to see, you know, Froch give him a lesson in professionalism, but I'd like to see him fight Groves first and then, you know, Chavez later.
Yeah, no, I agree. Okay, I mean, for a lot more on Froch, on the whole Froch and Groves situation, editor Tris Dixon has done quite a interesting editor's letter this week, where he looks at both sides and kind of offers his viewpoint, which is really good stuff. You've spoke to George Groves. We've got an exclusive interview with Groves in there, kind of explaining the situation after it came out in a Cole Froch statement that Groves had rejected terms for a rematch. Okay, so moving on, something else that we've got in this week is an exclusive interview with a former world champion from these shores, Enzo Macronelli, who is a big favourite of us here at Boxing News, but we have also been a bit concerned in recent years that maybe he's hung around too long. But to be fair to him, what he's done in the last few months is turn his career around at light heavyweight, two decent wins, admittedly at domestic level, but now he finds himself on the brink of a world title shot against Jürgen Bremer. Is this fairy tale stuff or is this horror movie stuff?
I think it starts out as fairy tale stuff, but I think there's always going to be that unease because people like Enzo, we like Enzo, but we've seen him suffer these nasty knockouts. Bremer's a spiteful puncher, and you worry. You don't want to see someone knocked out heavily, but you know we've written off Enzo's chances before, and he's proven us wrong. So, yeah, I suppose, you know, he's a grown-up. He can make his own decisions. Who turned down a world title fight? I mean, I would, because it would really hurt. But he is a professional fighter. So, yeah, I suppose if you're going to still be in boxing, you're going to want to fight the highest level you can. But there's that butt is going to remain. I don't think we want to see him suffer another heavy knockout.
No. I think I completely agree with everything you've said there. Ultimately, it is up to Enzo. He has got a series of wins, neither of which against Overeem McKenzie or Courtney Frye were worthy for me of then jumping up to a world light heavyweight title fight, but. You know, it's hard to begrudge him that. So, you know, all we can do is wish Enzo all the best. Moving on to events that are just around the corner, and it's the weekend, and I believe you, health abiding, are heading off to sunny Cardiff.
Exactly.
The weekend.
If I have to die in my seat, I will do.
Yeah, I think it's a really, really nice looking card, topped by Lee Selby against Rendell Munro. You've put together a really good preview in this week's issue, so
we won't
go too much into your into that. We'll let readers read what your prediction is. But first of all, tell me why Lee Selby can win, and then follow it by telling me why Rendell Munro can win.
Selby's bigger at featherweight. You know, he's got those skills. He can just keep Munro away from him, pick him apart as he comes forward. Munro, however, He has, you know, maybe not featherweight, but he's fought a lot of people who have gone on to be world champions. So that just shows that, you know, and had his own failed bid for a world title. So he's got that extra level of experience. If he rediscovers that old fire, he can keep rumbling forward, take over in the second half of the fight. That's how he'd do it.
Like it.
What will actually happen? Well, we'll have to see on Saturday.
We'll have to see on Saturday. But, you know, it is a nice looking bull. You've got that, which for me is, you make Selby favourite, but Munro is very much a live underdog. And also, in chief support, you know, a similar contest where you're not quite sure what the outcome is going to be is Gavin Reese against Gary Buckland.
I think that's a great fight.
Yeah, that could be that could be absolutely action packed. Again, why can Reese win and why can Buckland win?
You know, Reese, he's been at a higher level. He's had a world title at the weight above. He's small, but he's fast. Knows how to use his jab. Can get someone in those bursts of activity. Buckland is a tough guy. He might see. I think he will be able to shrug off the effects of that sort of devastating knockout against Stephen Smith. He doesn't take a backward step. He could grind Gavin Reese down.
No, it's good. I think as well. You've just got to say what a good advertisement this will be for British boxing,
Or Welsh boxing in particular. In this case,
yeah, Welsh boxing. Yeah. What else? Anything else on that bill? Oh, Anthony Dorian Dartch will be his toughest test yet. I think if he beats Dorian Dartch, I think the WBC should start about thinking banging him in the top five.
Why not? But yeah, that's a good fight. Dartch also has sort of home advantage, which, you know, he's probably won't count for all that much against Anthony Joshua. But Joshua's only three fights into his career. He's looked very good so far. But there is, regardless of what the WBC say, there's still a long way to go yet.
I think so as well. Okay, right, moving on to probably the last thing we'll discuss this week is the kind of the most people's leading middleweight, even though he hasn't perhaps done it on paper as yet, is Gennady Golovkin. And, you know, he was one of the most impressive fighters of the last 2 years in world boxing. Certainly one of the sport's most fearsome, underrated boxing skills. But it's not overly exciting this weekend, is it?
No.
Against Adama. What chance the upset?
I mean, nil.
Really that low?
I don't. Anything can happen. Golovkin might fall over or uppercut himself in the face. I don't know. Golovkin doesn't seem like, you know, someone who's going to slip up on this occasion. But, you know, is he yet? I know you just said he's seen as the leading middleweight in the world, but to be that, wouldn't he have needed to have beaten a Felix Sturm,
definitely,
a Gill, or got in there with Sergio Martinez, even though we think he'd probably be the favourite in those fights because he's beaten people with such style. He hasn't really had those defining wins yet, which I think is why, I mean, Boxing News didn't have him in our, we didn't have him in our top 10 fighters of 2013.
No.
And I think that's probably why, even though he's looked so good doing what he's had to do, he hasn't had the sort of, you know, his best win so far has been against Matthew Macklin, which is, you know, which was hugely impressive. But Macklin wasn't like a former champion or a current champion.
Yeah, absolutely. And incidentally, we were kind of, picking holes in governing body rankings and what have you. We have Sergio Martinez, quite rightly, still as middleweight champion. But I think what I was kind of getting at earlier is that I think if you were to pitch the leading middleweights together in a tournament, I think the majority of experts would pick Golovkin to be last man standing.
Yeah.
But yeah, he still has actually got to prove that. But I don't think Adama is the opponent to do that. If you do get boxing news this week, and of course we advise it, you can get it from news agents or you can download it. Is a really good feature from the always impressive Donald McRae on Gennady Golovkin. That's interesting reading.
Great amateur section this week.
Which is, amateurs edited by John Dennan. Well. Turn over the page, vested interest, meet the personalities at the heart of the sport with John Dennan.
How can you say no to that?
I'm not, mate. I'm not saying no. I'm saying yes.
Good boxing news active as well.
Yeah, very good. Very good. BN active. John Dennan. Good stuff. Okay, right. I think that'll about do it for this week, but we'll be back next week with more Opening Bell. And thanks, everybody, for listening.